This is Castle One. Race officer speaking.
Lay on head on boundary up ahead, 35 seconds out.
A bit lower and faster here.
Ho ho ho! That's a good one, Jimmy.
Still gaining on the lay line there.
Welcome back, podcast listeners, and thanks for joining us for this, the second part of our chat with Swiss America's Cup team Alinghi Red Bull Racing. Obviously, if you're tuning in without having first listened to part one, then you know what I'm going to say. We talked to the team's lead helm and the man in charge of the sailing team, as we get the lowdown on the team's resurgence in the world of the America's Cup. So check that out first. We've got plenty more chat from the team in this edition. But before we get going, if you're enjoying season four of the pod, then please do show your support at buymeacoffee.com/sailingpodcast. It's easy to do, and your support helps keep us free from annoying ads. And if you've not already done so, then head over and buy us a coffee or two. If you've done so already this season, then many, many thanks. Coming up in this edition, a little bit later, we chat to team board member Brad Butterworth. Many of you will have listened to Brad's full-length podcast about a year ago. Brad was involved with Alinghi when they first started out in the Cup back in 2003. And this time out, we talked to him about a bunch of stuff, including the challenges of having missed the first AC75 cycle in the last Cup, the nationality rule, Red Bull's involvement, and a whole lot more. We also chat to the team's principal designer, Adolfo Carew, a key member of the well-known naval architect set up at Boateng Partners, and designer at American Magic last time around. Adolfo gets us up to date on some of the design differences and challenges of this edition. But we kick things off with another key member of the sailing team, long-time Alinghi team member Yves Dutray, who was on board during both of the Swiss's team wins in 2003 and 2007, and is very excited to be starting out on another Cup campaign for his native Switzerland. I hope you enjoy the time I spent with Alinghi Red Bull Racing.
Everyone was behind us. They were watching the race in the middle of the night.
What we saw in the previous America's Cup, the boats are already dinosaurs in a way.
Yves, thanks for joining us on the podcast. It's great to speak to you. Just in from a day out on the water. How was it today? You achieving?
Today, actually, it was a short day for us. We just went out a little bit and came back quickly. But, you know, this is the America's Cup. Sometimes you need to have a plan before you can change it.
I can imagine. I mean, the team have spent a lot of time already out on the water here in Barcelona, and there's a lot of new faces in the sailing team. How exciting is it for you personally to be back on a Cup campaign with the team?
Yeah, for sure. It is very exciting. Exciting because the boats are very different than what I experienced in the past as well. You know, even if I've been foiling for many years now, these boats, they are looking so cool, you know. Looking at the past America's Cup, and you know it's also great to still be here in that new sort of rule with the 100% Swiss sailors. So that's pretty exciting as well. You know, it's like I had my opportunity back in 2003, and it's glad to be here with the guys that have another opportunity.
You've been with Alinghi, as they were previously, for a long time now. Just give us an idea of how long that you've been with the team.
It started pretty much at, you know, with the 2000 campaign. I was already with the Swiss team, the two keels boat, the yellow boat. And it started that I met Ernesto and Pierre-Yves, and they were already sailing on a big maxi and on the lake. And I was probably one of the few Swiss that have been sailing on a bigger boat. So I had my chance with them. And so it started, you know, right after, it was really concrete, after the Louis Vuitton 2000, when we finished with Be Happy, broke the mast, and then received a call from Ernesto saying, we're going to build a new boat on the lake. We need a sailor, we need a boat captain. We need somebody in the boatyard to look at the building, you know, just because I'm a boat builder. So I said, yeah, for sure, I'm joining, and I'm here since then. So I've been with the Lingi for all the campaign, basically, and in between sailing the Extreme Sailing Series and D35 and TF35 on the lake.
All right, let's go back to 2003. Auckland, New Zealand, you're on the team that would go on to successfully challenge New Zealand in their own backyard. Russell Coutts, Brad Butterworth, they've both been on the podcast talking about what that was like. But how was that for you, being in that Alinghi team at that time in New Zealand?
I remember it was a great experience, but it was tough. It was really tough. And in the meantime, it was a great opportunity for young guys of my age. I was 20 at that time, or 20, 22. So, you know, it's a bit of a mix of everything, but it was definitely a hard campaign, you know. Long winter in New Zealand, hard work, early mornings, and, you know, trying to keep up with the experienced guys as well. You know, they were here, they were like way above us, and we were the young Swiss team that had pretty much no clue about the MX Cup and the campaign. So it was a bit of a catch-up, but a great experience at the end, you know. And with the cherry on the cake when we came back with a cup and experiencing also everything in Switzerland, because we had no clue about what was going on in Switzerland. You know, you're like, you're away from home. There was the beginning of internet, and so it wasn't that easy to really communicate and understand what was happening in Switzerland. But landing that day with the cup with like 40,000 people in Geneva, that was awesome.
That's amazing. I mean, just describe perhaps what it meant for the country to have that trophy.
Yeah, I think we can definitely see that. What we saw that everyone was behind us. They were watching the race in the middle of the night. Even the people that had no clue about sailing, but because they were behind a flag, basically. And then what we experienced as well is that all the sailing school, there were a lot of young kids, you know, signing in the schools. And I think it was something special, definitely. And I think today, all these young guys that they were signing up at the sailing school, they, you know, some of them are here now. So it's pretty nice. It's a nice story.
It was the first time ever that a new team had come in and won the America's Cup. Just take yourself back to that moment. Describe it for me. How did it feel lifting that famous trophy at the very first attempt?
Again, it was a lot of hard work. So it's like a relief when you do that. Because you know, you're at the end, you don't know what's going to happen, but you just enjoy the moment. But definitely it was something special, because you know, you don't really know what's going to happen until the end. I've been asked before, when do you feel confident and when do you know that you're going to win? I think in the end, because you can't. You don't really know. To be honest, in 2007, we knew that we had it. We had a good, you know, good pace, and we knew that from the experience we had a good boat. But in 2003, there was a big question mark until the end. So it was a great relief to get that cup. That's for sure.
The team then went on to successfully defend the cup, of course, in Valencia, but then lost the Deed of Gift match. And from there, it's been quite a while without a cup team. I mean, watching the cup take place in New Zealand, the foiling monohulls going head to head, What were you thinking? What did you think of that last cup?
First of all, I was one of the few that were thinking that the boat were a great boat. You know, when we first saw the design, many people were saying, this is crazy, this is not going to work. And you know, I was quite happy to see that because I knew there was a good potential for this boat. And so I've been interested, for sure. Not being part of it, it's always pretty hard to, you know, really get into it because everything is secret, as we know. It's obviously a little bit different now that we have the Recon program, but I for sure enjoyed the racing. These boats are great. Like there's no other boat like it on the water now, but they're really powerful and great boat.
Well, now of course you have one. The team took delivery of Boat Zero, Team New Zealand's AC75. I mean, how is that getting to grips with what for you is a new class? What's it been like?
First of all, it's pretty impressive. There's a lot of power, a lot of, you know, you can have quite a bit of, let's say, technical issue. I mean, you need to work on systems. It's quite a complicated boat, you know. You can't just hoist sail and go. It takes a bit of time in the morning to get the boat, you know, ready to actually sail. And yeah, it's quite complex. But in the meantime, it's very powerful, very fast, and very impressive at first. And I was a bit shy on the first sailing days, I have to be honest, because it's you can definitely feel the power. But like any other boat, we know getting used to it. I think we had in the lower range, we had the same feeling stepping up on GC32 at the first day. You know, it was quite impressive. And then at the end, you race at 35 knot plus, and it's not a problem anymore. So it's the same feeling with these boats, but it's another scale. It's the scale up for sure.
I mean, nobody in your sailing team has experience of sailing these boats. I just wondered how nervous everyone was in those initial few weeks when you launched out from here.
Yeah, I don't think there is place to, you know, being nervous. You need to work, you need to learn, you need to, I don't think there's many places where you can just let yourself go and be impressed by the beast. For sure, it is in some ways impressive, but that has to go away pretty fast. You know, you need to be concentrate and ready for the fight with the bull. So it's you know, it's even if you have no experience, we're still sailors, and I believe we're still good sailors. So it comes quite quickly.
What's your role on the boat, Eve?
So I'm part of the driving group. So I will probably not take the wheel, but you know, you can. We are a few people that can change a little bit position on the boat, sail trim, foil trim. So we're working on that at the moment within the driving group.
As we've said, the team have missed a few editions of this cup. I mean, how easy has it been to put together a strong sailing team? The nationality rule applies, of course. So no one, as we've said, has AC75 experience. I mean, how much of an issue has that been?
Yeah, of course, we are catching up, and we will be catching up until the end, that's for sure. We don't have the 36th experience. That's where you need to, you know, build a team with knowledge from the past, and that's what we've been trying to do in the design team, but also with people like Dean Barker or Pietro Cibero, you know, helping us a little bit around that. To try to improve pretty fast. So it is really important to get help from the outside. And I guess it's a little bit like the first campaign that we did. We were a Swiss team, but we needed experience, and we needed the Kiwi band to, you know, get us up to speed.
You've got some pretty talented young guys on the team. You know, how have they approached it? How's it been with them?
If you're talking me being the oldest with the youngest, or I think it is going great. You know, the funny thing is they don't know it yet, but I've been in their position before, so I know exactly what they feel. But you know, it's kind of funny. Obviously, we don't have exactly the same opinion, the same wish in life, probably because of the age. But I think we're all good friends, and it works pretty well with the young guys. There's no issue with that.
You are, as we've said, a key member of the sailing team. What do you see as the team's biggest challenge to a successful campaign?
I think for sure it's the catching up. You know, it's like making sure we're learning fast enough to catch up to what we don't have. Basically, we have a boat now, but we're still in the process of putting everything together and make it work and finalizing the new design. And this is key, you know, putting everything together quick enough to be on time with the design. And then in the second stage, probably the match racing and the sailing racing, basically, when we're going to be talking about real racing.
As we know, in New Zealand, sailing, I mean, the America's Cup, it's a national sport. What about in Switzerland, though? How big is the cup in Switzerland? And did that win mean anything back home?
Yeah, it did. I mean, the America's Cup was a big thing back in 2003 after the cup, for sure. After that, it was a bit, you know, a lot of people were still following us for Valencia. But I also feel that, you know, after this, it just kind of that people behind us, they you know, slipped away a little bit because of the issue that we had with in 2010, you know, the big battle in the US court, Supreme Court. There was something, you know, people were not really understanding that. And so I think it's today our job to get everyone behind us again. And that's what we're going to try to do in the next 2 years.
You know, how important is it that you're challenging for the cup in Europe?
It is. I mean, I'm not going to be talking for the team because I don't know what would have been the decision otherwise. But I think personally, it's very important because I'm very close from family. I'm quite happy that it is in Europe, for sure. Even if I liked very much New Zealand, and you know, looking at the last cup, it reminded me a lot of good stuff, you know. And in a way, I was hoping to go back in New Zealand because I love the country. On the other hand, I'm very very happy to be here in Barcelona. It's a very nice city, nice weather, and so far we have pretty good sailing days. And I think it's going to be very important for the America's Cup and the entire sailing world to have an edition in Europe again.
And pretty easy for the Swiss sailing fans to get behind their team again.
Yeah, probably it's going to be much easier for the Swiss, for sure, to follow us, you know, again, even if it's probably not the same generation. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
When you heard the news that Alinghi was coming back, what did you think? What was your reaction?
Yeah, it was a big surprise because, to be honest, I mean, it wasn't it wasn't dropped like a bomb. You know, I've been hearing about it for a few weeks because, you know, I was still sailing with the team. And so it was in the air, and it was even in the air from the other competitors out there that we know, because we compete against them, that we might come back. So it's sometimes you hear the news from somewhere else, you know, and it's how rumors goes. But it was quite a surprise. And in the meantime, I was really excited about it. And on the other hand, I was a bit worried. Or, you know, I wasn't sure if I would be still there for it because, you know, I'm not the youngest anymore in the team. And also because my life has been, you know, changed. I have three kids in Switzerland, so, you know, it was a kind of a big decision for me. But at the end, it's, you know, when you're a professional sailor, you want to race the Amateur's Cup. There's nothing above it. So you want to do it. So that's why I'm here.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Two-time America's Cup winner, Yves Dutray, hoping to help Alinghi Red Bull Racing to their third Cup victory next year in Barcelona. Excitement is building in the host city. The team bases are being built. And for a couple of days, we were out on the water watching Alinghi charge around the bay in their AC75. It's going to be amazing when the rest of the teams arrive this summer. The AC75 was, of course, used for the first time in Auckland, and each team was allowed to build two boats. And Team New Zealand's first boat, the first AC75 to be built, now belongs to the Swiss team. Our next guest was instrumental in the design and build of two AC75s for American team American Magic. Part of the famed Boateam Partners Naval Architects, Adolfo Carew is now heading the design team at Alinghi Red Bull Racing as they reinterpret the new rules and build just the one AC75 for the Cup in Barcelona. Adolfo, thanks for joining us on the podcast. It's great to have you here, a key member of Boateam Partners Naval Architects. Just explain your role here with Alinghi Red Bull Racing.
Okay, thanks, Shirley. This is my third campaign as design coordinator. So usually with Marcelino Boateam, we are partners for many years now. So after the Valencia Cup, we started working together. And since then, we worked for a few Cup teams. But since the AC35, where we moved to Cagliari to work for Luna Rossa in the campaign that was truncated, that was my first adventure as design coordinator. Previously, I was working on VPPs and performance, and that's what I usually do in the office in Santander as well. And but then with Luna Rossa, it was natural that Marcelino was lead designer. I was sort of coordinating everything, and then the same with American Magic, and now with Alinghi Red Bull Racing. So it's a role which I'm growing into, and I'm feeling pretty comfortable. It's a nice job.
As you said, in the previous Cup, the company worked with American Magic designing the AC75. It was the class's first Cup then, of course. How massive a design project was it, designing a 75-foot foiling monohull?
Yeah, it was massive. It was massive and it was getting into the unknown, because that boat only existed in the Team New Zealand simulator back then. So early on, when we got together with the management, we decided what we had to go sailing in these sort of boats. So we got that 38-footer that we converted into the mule. And funny thing is, after our first day or two, we got calls from Team New Zealand. So it's working. So it was that different, and that it was pretty, you know, we're getting into the unknown. So it was a really, really interesting challenge. And the first generation boats was a bit what we saw back then was where the different teams were in terms of understanding the concept, understanding the rule as well, which is also very new and still very complex. And it was fascinating how everything came out and how the Cup itself ended with all the teams, you know, at a pretty decent performance level and sailing the boats really well. So it was, I think it was, given the risk of changing class and concept so dramatically, it was it proved to be the right choice. Yeah.
What did you think of all the boats in the last Cup? I mean, whose AC75 looked good to you? Who got it wrong? What did you think of the previous boats?
Well, we had 8 boats to analyze and to study, and to they were all different. And everyone well started with their first, you know, stab at the rule and the boat. And then the second generation boats already had a bit of inspiration from everyone. So clearly the fastest one boat won. So let's say that Team New Zealand was the team that got it most right. Having said that, they didn't have everything right. There were things on other boats which were better and interesting. And so that's something which probably we'll see in the next generation of boats, knowing that the rule has changed as well a fair bit. So what we saw in the previous America's Cup, the boats are already dinosaurs in a way. And so the new boats are lighter, you know, they're going to be way more agile. And I think the rule has been changed for the good in most cases. And we'll see pretty different boats. And let's see how they go.
What lessons do you think you've learned from the process in AC36 to what you're working on now?
I think the many lessons, because our campaign last time was going really, really, you know, really well until it went really, really bad after the crash. And so just from a purely design standpoint, we learned that, clearly everything needs to be at a really, really, really high level. So you just cannot, what usually we say, you cannot kick the can down the road and try to figure it out later on. You need to really attack the problems early on, or what you think is challenging early on, and make sure you don't you're not playing the catch-up game, because then it's most probably you won't have the fastest boat or the best boat in most of the conditions. So I think that's the lesson. It's just being way more when we started, have our eyes open, read the rule very, very carefully, because it has changed. Make sure we understand where the opportunities are, and that all the areas are at a, you know, high level when we go sailing in September 2024.
Well, let's look at the rules. I mean, just explain to our listeners, are there any big changes in the class that will affect the design decisions?
Yeah, there's big changes. Apart from the obvious ones, which are the boat is going to be lighter because of the foils are lighter, and then we have less crew, so it's going to be about 900 kilos lighter. That's already a big number. And then the wings are going to be a longer span, so it helps the light air takeoff. We have the self-tacking jib, that's pretty massive. We don't have runners, so the whole sail plan in a way it's different, and we're learning. And then on the logic side, on the systems and logic side, the rule is a bit more open. So now we can link rig functions and be a bit more creative with the logic. So I think that in itself, also the hull shape, there's a few subtle rule changes which will make them a bit different as well. So, and there's also new cockpit rules, which are good, just basically for safety. So we have to comply with, crew escape rules and so on. So that all in all will make the boats, I think, a lot better and a lot more suited to the conditions.
We've seen a drop from 11 crew to just 8, which obviously is less weight. But what impact does that have on the decisions that you're making now?
Well, it's always related to where you're going to sail, and that's why we're here in Barcelona, to learn what the conditions that we need to deal with and then suit the design. So it's not only the rule change, but it's also the venue change, and it's equally important as in any design that we do. So right now, that's what we're trying to figure out. What is Barcelona? It's been a venue which, after the 92 Olympics, there has been, an event here and there, but it's not a venue which is well known, especially in those months of September and October. And so that's why we decided to move, straight away. It was an easy decision for us. We didn't have a base. We were in Switzerland and we had to move somewhere. The decision came when we came here. But I think it's good. It's a pretty specific venue, and we need to make sure we suit our design for it.
I'd sailed here in the Olympics all those years ago, in the summer, of course, but you know, it's not an easy, straightforward venue. What are your initial thoughts of the venue, and how big a factor is that in optimizing where you go with the design?
Well, first, without giving up too much, of course, in all the previous America's Cups since Valencia, actually, the conditions have been a bit more predictable, a bit more stable. The sea state clearly has been non-existent, it's been flat water venues, and here in the Med we have, you know, it's an open course, and so you have a bit more swell, a bit more chop, and that's a challenge. And you have the wind conditions are pretty variable. So I think everyone's aware that the sea state has added another dimension, big dimension to the problem, a fascinating dimension, because we're all, you know, pretty, I guess all the design teams are quickly catching up on their design tools, because now we have to account for waves, which is something which we didn't have to do as much last time. So that's what's been disruptive, I think, this time around, is a new venue which nobody knew much about in a tricky month, because it's after the summer. So then the winds get even more unpredictable, like we saw last September with the TP52s racing here, and you know, there's no wind at all. And we're learning. We're still learning. We have time to make some decisions, and that's why we're sailing so much on the 75 and now the 40, but especially on the 75.
My memories of racing here was that the waves never really lined up with the wind. Mm.
Yeah, exactly.
I can imagine that's a nightmare for a designer.
Yes, exactly.
Adolfo, it's a cliche in the cup, isn't it, that you never have enough time. Maybe give us a sense of the scales involved. Let's take foils, for example. How long does it take, once you sign off on a design decision, to build and then take delivery of a set of foils?
Yeah, we're getting better, but still, it's months, could be between 4 to 6 months. Depends on how, also, you know, it's not only the relationship between the team members, because to design a foil in the recent past, in the AC72s and the AC50s, these are carbon foils. So really there's no any systems inside the foil. You do have to, you know, adjust cant and rake and so on, but that's in a box which is a bit separate. Here the foils, everything, all the systems are integrated into the foil. That means that the foil designer needs to work with a, you know, structural engineer and the mechanical engineer, but also with a machine shop, which has to machine all these components to a specific tolerance. And you need to deal with the world with economics, because sourcing big blocks of steel right now is not that straightforward. So on top of all the lead times, you need to make sure that you can find, you know, the right block of steel, and that's also a challenge. So you do need to make up your mind and have some clear ideas of what you want to design very early on, amazingly early on. Yeah,
it's a long time, isn't it? I mean, what happens if you go to all that trouble and they're not right?
It has happened in the past. I hope it doesn't happen too much in the future. But yeah, that's an option and that's a possibility, and that's where you have to evaluate, you know, risk reward, and how much you want to push your design into the unknown for potential performance benefits, and see if it's worth taking the risk or not. And that's where the experience from the last cup, it's pretty valuable, because all the designers we faced with this challenge for the first time in years in Valencia, the keels had trim tufts, you know, which are similar to that, but they were super simple. And back then we thought there was, you know, the most complicated part of the boat, but the systems that we're seeing right now on our foils are, you know, really, really, really complicated. Last time we had this partnership with Airbus, and so I had the privilege to go to Toulouse and interview many engineers. So we had a lot of engineers, but they, which are used to building wings with flaps and, you know, and control systems and so on, they were just you know, amazed to what not only the challenge that we face, but how quickly we have to make decisions with little information. And that's where judgment, you know, plays a big part. And that's why the CAP attracts so many, you know, brilliant, you know, engineers and designers and people, because, you know, you need to have the stomach to make some of these decisions. And some people enjoy it, some people don't.
Firstly, I think Alinghi Red Bull Racing have a degree of collaboration with Red Bull's Formula One setup. Can you tell us what that collaboration is? I mean, how closely do you work with the F1 guys?
It's pretty close. But just to clarify, the Formula One team, it's set up to win the Formula One World Championship. So that's their first objective. Alinghi Red Bull Racing, we're here to win the America's Cup. So there's this company sort of in between, which is called Red Bull Advanced Technologies, which has a lot of Formula One or ex-Formula One engineers, or it's just like a sister company. So most of the collaboration happens with Red Bull Advanced Technologies, and there again we have a, you know, a lot of projects. This CAP is about, you know, you know, you have ideas, and then each idea becomes, if it passes the filters, becomes a project. And so then within that project, you have a specification, and then we need to figure out if we do that ourselves in-house with our own engineers and builders, or we do it outside. And now having Red Bull Advanced Technology, that's the nice thing, which they have a lot of engineers, and they're working in different projects throughout the boat and helping us quite a lot. The what you usually find is that working with external industries bring a different perspective and different ideas, and I think that's the biggest value. Is sometimes they are thinking the problem in a different way, and you know, they say, well, why don't you try this? Which then probably becomes obvious, but it's not obvious if you're always looking at your boat and your you know, and your problems. And I think that's where we're finding the biggest benefits of the collaboration.
A few of the teams have close ties to motorsport, Ineos especially, Mercedes, Formula One, of course. Do you think there is a danger, though, that this can all be a bit of a distraction? I mean, there's a danger it could lead down some pretty strange design roads.
Yeah, definitely. And as I go back to judgment the problem here is when you mentioned earlier, you know, you were involved in the previous campaign. How do you design your next boat? Really, and that's no different with what we do in the office and with our boats. Every time we start a new project, we throw as much as we can in the bin and we start from scratch. And preconceived ideas sometimes are your worst enemy if this is an innovation game. And the fastest boat will win the America's Cup. I don't think it's going to be any different this time around. So having too much experience and too much, you know, this is how it should be, sometimes could be wrong. And that's again where with Marcelino we have to, you know, see how much to push in one direction, or okay, well, let's do a bit of what we know and not go too crazy in another direction. It's a bit of a balancing act. And again, that's part of the fascinating things of, and especially of my role, because as design coordinator, I have to see it all. I have to be aware of everything, so make sure that when the puzzle is put together, all the pieces, you know, fit. So yeah, we have that in every single area. And yeah, there's a lot of, right now, we're in this part of the, you know, the campaigns have different phases. The initial phase is all about creativity and ideas, and now we're more about starting narrowing the designs and start to execute and build things. So right now is crunching time. We have to make decisions, and it's good.
What a stressful job. Imagine if you've forgotten a piece of the jigsaw.
Yeah, everyone must have their own. I have my own workflow, and just making sure what affects, you know, everything affects to some extent everything on the boat. And you need to make sure that everyone's aware that what they're doing affects something else in the boat. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's I think the more you do it, the easier it gets in a way. you need to train. You need to train to do this job or any job, I guess.
How stressful, I mean, how nervous are you in a cup cycle as a designer? I mean, teams start launching boats, you see what they've done and think, oh, why didn't we do that? I mean, how stressful is it in your job?
No, I personally, I make sure that we make really good use of the time that we have. So we start early, we get our a good team in place, and then that we do our homework. That's the whole point. We have to make sure that we execute our plans with enough flexibility to allow for changes along the road. But I think the better you do your homework, the less stress you are at the end, because things sort of should fit, and then you go there and you execute your vision of the design. Well, then if you get it wrong, well, that's it. At least you've done it to the best of your abilities, I guess. So I probably it's a constant stress. I don't like the word stress at all. I mean, we're here to design fast boats, and it's super exciting, and we keep it very professional, very serious, but at the same time, it's a fun environment. That's the whole point, right? So it's a journey, and we're trying to have a good time and design the fast boat. So yeah, when you see when you see other boats and someone was smarter than we were, well, good on them. We have to keep trying. I don't know, but that's what you do, no? And there's a bit of reactivity that you need to allow at the end. So that's where also it's part of the planning. But with these boats, reality is that it gets tougher and tougher to change major things. You can change, things here and there, but not change the whole design. So yeah, we better get it right now.
Okay, I'm going to go back a while now, Adolfo. But in actual fact, we have shared a race course. Sydney 2000, I was sailing the Europe class to a gold medal. You were competing for Uruguay in the laser class, sailing on the same course as us. Ben Ainslie won gold in that laser regatta. Paul Goodison was his training partner. Tom Slingsby was famously watching the racing as a 15-year-old fan from the headland. Francesco Bruni was racing for Italy in the 49er. 23 years ago, if I'd have told you you'd be designing 75-foot foiling monohulls, and those guys would all be racing around at 50 knots, what do you think you'd have said?
I already had the cup in my radar, so I'm pretty goal oriented, and I knew that after the Olympics. The Olympics for me was a big deal. Since I was super young, it was my dream. I wanted to go to the Olympics. I was sailing in Uruguay since very young in the Optimists, and then with the laser, by the time I was South America was pretty strong in the laser back then, because it was Robert Scheidt and a few guys, and Torwin was doing a bit, and there was a lot of good guys. So back then, I had won the Junior South American Championships, and when I went to the Worlds in Garda, I think I can remember the year, with all these names, with Ben and Robert and all the guys, it was announced that, I was 18, I think, it was announced that the laser was going to be an Olympic class for Atlanta. So I trained for Atlanta, didn't make it, but there also Santi Lange was there in the laser, so he's close, and we're all sort of training together. So then I did made it for Sydney, and I really enjoyed those games. But I knew that without all the infrastructure that you need, you can only reach to a certain point. So I reached to the goal that I had achieved to myself, was mid fleet and doing some good regattas, and then straight on to finish my mechanical engineer degree. And since I was very young, I wanted to go to Southampton to study naval architecture. And so then I went to Southampton, did the masters. And that was when Alinghi was winning the cup in Auckland. So who would have said that, I was a student in Southampton, and 20 years later, I'm design coordinator for Alinghi. That's a also a big deal. And so, yeah, and then luckily I did pretty well in Southampton, and I got a job in the America's Cup almost straight away. So here we are. Yeah, it's been a journey.
Adolfo, many, many thanks for your time. It's been absolutely fascinating. All the very best.
Okay, thanks, Julie. That's good. Thank you.
I mentioned in the intro to part one that it's very soon, just 500 days to the start of the first cup match in Barcelona. So Adolfo is a man with a very tight schedule. So many thanks for him for making the time to chat to us. Obviously, you can't see Adolfo in this podcast, but he's a man that exudes enthusiasm when he talks boat design. He's fascinating to talk to, and I can't wait to see what the design decisions lead to. Our final guest this month needs no introduction to regular podcast listeners. Last season, Brad Butterworth featured in his own edition of The Pod and is an influential figure in the world of the America's Cup. Part of the defending New Zealand team that moved over to successfully challenge for Alinghi in 2003, Brad has been part of the Alinghi setup ever since. He wasn't in Barcelona while we were there, so we chatted to him online from his home in New Zealand.
We've just been in Barcelona catching up with the team, and there's a real buzz about the place. I mean, some great people involved. How exciting is it for you and for the team to be back trying to win the America's Cup?
Oh, I think it's, you know, you don't get many opportunities to do this, and so when something comes along like this, it's you know, it's a great opportunity for everybody that's you know, in the group. And I think we have really got a good cross-section of very good people in every area, so you know, we hopefully we can you know, get to the standard that's needed to compete.
What about for you, Brad? Are you enjoying being back in the mix?
Yeah, well, I'm sort of always watching it, but you know, I like to think more of a student of the game. So I love the sport, and I love that sort of side of it. And so, yeah, it's just, I really am enjoying it. And you know, I'm going to, I think, spend quite a bit more time in Barcelona, and you know, see what happens.
We spoke to you on the podcast during AC36 in New Zealand, and from memory, you were very non-committal about an Alinghi return. But behind the scenes, though, it looks like you were pretty busy. Give us a glimpse into what that was like, that period, trying to pull everything together and get back up and running in this America's Cup.
Well, I guess the last America's Cup, I was sort of fortunate that I wound up doing some work with Prada, more on the event side of it, but just gave me total sort of immersion with the teams, you know, be able to see what was going on and see who the people are and, you know, who we could sort of work with as it went on. So, yeah, we're just looking at that and trying to decide what's the right sort of mix. And also, you know, you need, you know, a guy like Ernesto to really commit to it. And, you know, he's got to, not just financially, but sort of, you know, and his time is a lot more important, really. So, you know, once he decided that he was happy to go ahead and happy with the, you know, with a good group of people, he sort of pulled the trigger. And with Red Bull, it's, you know, partnering up. It's been, you know, very, I think, you know, it's actually been one of the better campaigns starting wise that I've ever sort of come across.
What's that like, that transfer season? I mean, just describe how that all happens, Brad.
Well, Nesto, most of the teams trying to emulate the way they work like a Formula One team, you know, because we'll never be a Formula One team because it's a totally different sport. And but you're trying to leave no stone unturned and trying to be as professional as possible, and all those things are super important. So, you know, when being able to partner with one of the, you know, top F1 teams, like, you know, Ben has with Mercedes and with us with Red Bull, it's been, you know, a very healthy, very good sort of thing. And it's that all came from Ernesto. He knew Mr. Matic, who unfortunately died last year. So, the, you know, that sort of relationship turned into a partnership. So that was pretty cool.
We'll talk a bit about Red Bull in a second, but just perhaps explain what your role is within the team now it's all up and running.
Well, I sit on the board with Ernesto. There's four of us. And basically, I'm back and forth to Barcelona and try to help out where I can and just bring what experience I've had in the past to the group as it is. And, that's about it. I mean, I think hopefully I'll get a bit more fully immersed in it as time goes on. I'll be back there next month or early in the month, and I get actually leave on the Sunday here. So, I'm looking forward to, not only sort of overseeing things, but actually with being a board member, but being more sort of a team member with them.
As you say, the owner of Alinghi is Ernesto Bertarelli, and he's won the Cup twice before, but he sat out the last three Cup cycles. What was it, Brad, about this edition that finally drew him back in?
I think he really likes the foiling aspect of it. And I don't think he wanted to sit out another one. He very nearly pulled the trigger for Bermuda. And then for New Zealand, everybody was sort of waiting to see what was going to happen with, this would work out and how it would work out. And it's obviously it's been very difficult times with COVID and whatnot. But, we had enough sort of technical help. We could get enough current people that he pulled the trigger and off we went.
We were in Barcelona last week and Ernesto was actually there sailing on board the AC-75. I mean, fully involved in the day's operation. How's he enjoying it all?
I think he loves the sport. He loves sailing. He's sort of been instrumental on getting a foiling boat on the lake of Geneva, with a nice class there, the TFs. And so, he loves sailing and that's part of his passion. So, the Cup has been a highlight, definitely a highlight, just like for, all the guys that have been in these teams with Alinghi. So it's, you sort of want to try and recreate that if you can. It's very difficult under these circumstances, but, that's the game.
You're a man with a lot of Cup experience, Brad, involved, of course, when Alinghi were the first ever team to win at the first attempt. With what you know about the Cup, how much work is there to do now if the team are to have a realistic chance of success again?
I think it's there's a lot of work to do, Luckily, there's over a year till the actual Cup itself. And so, most teams are probably in the process of finalising their designs so they can build. You get to build one boat. And we were fortunate enough to, be able to buy a boat off Team New Zealand, which came with nothing really. So we've had to do it from scratch, that boat. And, but I think without that, would be very difficult to have a real chance of challenging the good teams. And so, there's a lot of work to be done there, and a lot of the boats are highly complicated, and I wouldn't say that would be my choice, but this is what we have to deal with, and so you have to get good at it.
Let's talk a bit about personnel. I mean, how tough was it putting a good team together, coming in as a new team, this time with a very strict nationality rule?
Well, it's really just the sailors that are impacted by that. So if you were involved in the Cup last time, it really wasn't a problem for you, So you see guys like Spittle or other guys that that aren't nationalities of the teams that they're representing, they could get away with it because they were from last time. But it's been a bit of a tough ask, I reckon, and. I'm not so sure it's the right way to go, but anyway, that's the rule and you have to live with it. And, we'll see how we go. I mean, each team probably would be stronger if you could get an overseas, somebody from outside the country to fit into certain positions. And I would say each team would be in that would be like that, but you know, it's, you have to take the your nationality, and so that's going to be, it's a big learning curve for us, you know, being a Swiss team. But I think, you know, we have a really good base of the sailors that can sail a boat, so that's, I think we'll be okay there. It's just, will we get enough racing? I don't know. We'll have to work on that.
Let's quickly talk about Red Bull. I mean, they're not a sponsor, which I guess most people think they are. They're a 50% partner in Alinghi Red Bull Racing. And they're an entity with a lot going on in sport across the spectrum, from Formula One to snowboarding. I mean, what is it about the Cup, do you think, that meant they wanted to get involved?
Oh, probably the boats look more extreme. So, you know, they tend to like that sort of thing. And, I mean, they, you know, it's a big engine, the Red Bull side of things, and they have a lot to offer in many ways. And so, you know, I've been, you know, the guys I've had to deal with have been, you know, fantastic and, you know, and they're highly intelligent. And it's, you know, it's always good having somebody, you know, all those smart guys in the room. You're always a bit blown away by, you know, how they can come up with the solution. So, you know, I think it's been a fantastic, so far it's been fantastic, but we have to convert that into actual results.
What are they adding to the mix? And I suppose the obvious question is, how much collaboration is there between the F1 design talent and your sailing design team?
Well, they take on different projects that they think they can help with. So, you know, there's a lot of interchange between the, you know, Marcelino Bottin, who's the primary designer, and what he needs to try and make the boat go, it will be as fast as it possibly can. And so that, you know, they, like I say, they're involved in a lot of parts of the design part of the team, and, you know, and the sailing side of it too, you know. So they bring a lot more, I guess, technology, and, you know, some of it is applicable to sailing, some of it's not. And so, you know, you just have to really pick out which parts are the best parts for them to get involved in. And, you know, they work it out too. They, you know, don't know about some things and they know a lot about other things. So, yeah, but I would rather have them with us than, you know, being up against them, that's for sure.
There is a danger, isn't there? Especially in the early days of, you know, going down kind of rabbit holes, when you bring in designers.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Everybody's got different, and you know, the Cup is super design orientated now, more so than ever before. You know, the design teams are huge, and the design budgets are huge, and you know, the sailing side of things has taken a not a back seat, but it's a little bit, it's less staffed than it was historically.
One thing that was pretty obvious when we were there is that there's much youth and enthusiasm in the team. I mean, is there an expectation that this team will be in the mix come next October? Or, Brad, is this a longer-term project?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think we have to be realistic and, you know, we have to have a chance of winning. And there's no reason, you know, I wouldn't do it otherwise, and I don't, Ernesto definitely wouldn't do it. I don't think he's actually looking forward to past the end of this Cup. You know, this is very important to first get to the America's Cup and then have a chance of winning it. So, you know, there's a lot of good challenges there now and a lot of, you know, smart guys and involved in other teams. So, you know, the Challenger Series will be a lot stronger than it was probably last time. And, you know, that will only help the challenges in the long run.
I'm sure you've been keeping a close eye on the opposition, and it's a bit easier now, isn't it, with Central Recon. I mean, who's been impressing you so far when you look at the other teams?
Well, you know, the other team, like the teams from last time, have all got their programs. We're always going. American Magic, no problem to sail in Pensacola with their big boat, and also with the 40. Prada has built a boat of their own. Ineos is a bit different. They don't use their boats from last time. They've just built a test boat that they are using for everything, I think. But, you know, the actual defender, because they have, you know, such a huge depth in everything that, you know, they're riding the rule, they're running the regatta, they've got a huge advantage, I would say, and that they'll be the toughest to beat by far.
And for you, Brad, you've seen the team racing around in Barcelona in the AC75 and also the AC40. I mean, do you miss being on board? I mean, what are your thoughts on racing these amazing monohulls?
Definitely not. I've got no interest. It's like a go-kart. I think it's, look, it's a, you know, it's not for me. I'm sailing in, you know, bigger boats with pulling sails up and down, and the boats are in the water. And these are a totally different concept. And okay, they are boats and they have to be sailed, and it's a sailing regatta, that's for sure. But it's a totally different thing, you know. I don't think there's, you know, there's hard corners or confines on the course size. You know, there's no sail changing at all. And so, you know, tactically the boats are probably actually quite easy because it's, you know, the boats are at high speed. And so I don't think starting hasn't been a problem for the boats, you know. And when getting around the course, it's really just, you know, keeping that flight time at 100% and not making any mistakes. So, you know, I don't think it's easy. I think it's pretty hard. And I think the guys that are sailing the boats are, you know, highly talented in that respect. But it's, you know, it's definitely not my sort of sailing.
Brad, well, there's exciting times ahead, isn't there? Many, many thanks for your time. Hopefully we'll speak again.
No problem, Shirley. All the best, eh?
Brad Butterworth, rounding off a fascinating series of interviews from the team at Alinghi Red Bull Racing in Barcelona. It's exciting. Mid-cup cycle, new AC75s being designed and built around the world. We're hoping to bring you more from the world of the America's Cup over the coming months. Before we go, a massive thanks to everyone at Alinghi Red Bull Racing. Sophia and our comms team looked after us in fine fashion. So a massive thanks to all of them and to the Real Club Nautico for letting us take over a small corner of the club. Thank you. Until next time, if you're enjoying what you hear, you know what to do. Support the pod. It's really easy. Wherever you are, head over to buymeacoffee.com/sailingpodcast. And help us bring you these uninterrupted ad-free chats from all around the sport of sailing. Your support means a lot. Before we go, the podcast wouldn't be a thing without the tireless work of Tim at Vertigo Films. Despite everything else, he fits it into his busy schedule. Somehow, he manages to magic up these wonderful podcasts each month. So Tim, a big thanks. He's got a bit of a big project on the go this coming month. I may tell you more next month if I'm allowed to, but he's pretty busy. Well, do keep in touch via social media. It's great to hear from you. Whether you're telling us where you listen to the pod, have some ideas on who you'd like to hear from, or just saying hello. I'm Shirley Sale on Instagram and Twitter, Shirley Robertson on Facebook, and it's great to hear your thoughts on the pod. That's all from us this month. Thank you so much for listening. Have fun on the water and sail safe, everyone.
This is Castle One. Race officer speaking.
Lay on, head on boundary up ahead, 35 seconds out.
A bit lower and faster here.
Ho, ho, ho. That's a good one, Jimmy.
Still gaining on the lay on there.
Look at it, 10-5, 42.
Matching him on the boundary, yeah. Copy.
This is Castle One standing by. Out.